Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here for the next hour. And good morning, Tom. How are you doing?
Hey, not too shabby. How about you this fine day?
Drier than expected. That was a little bit of a downpour there. I think we need to do our standard let's complain about the weather segment as we do every Saturday.
We're Minnesotans. It's mandatory.
Yeah, well, we had a nice week, and is it too much to ask for one Saturday that's dry and warm and sunny?
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, it is. Excellent.
You are a greedy man.
I am a very greedy person, but we'll try to make do with what it is. We are dry right now, and it is the Rivertown Art Fair today.
That's right. I actually managed to get down there right before the show, take a little walk around.
A lot of people are not bothered by the elements of our Minnesota weather, so it's good to see people out there. Encourage people to come out and check it out. There are still some parking spots because I think everyone here found a place to park.
I'm not a huge art person myself when it comes to the stuff they have, but they have lots of mini donuts, that I am a fan of.
Radio is art, and we're going to create art here the next hour. Speaking of art, well, artists, doctors, Dr. Joyce Brothers, famed TV psychologist, dies at 85. Dr. Joyce Brothers, a psychologist who became a pop culture fixture after she turned to radio and television in the late 50s, to tend to the nation's psyche, has died. She was 85 years old. Do you know who Dr. Joyce Brothers is?
I absolutely do. She was also very controversial, from my understanding.
In what respect?
Well, some people didn't exactly think that she was deserved to be a doctor, but she was a very smart woman.
When Brothers' psychological expertise was first showcased on NBC in 1958, she paved the way for others in her field to bring their talents to television, according to the Paley Center for Media Study in New York, which, by the way, is a great museum if you're in New York. They have tons of tapes, tons of video, much like our very own tcmedianow.com. Enough self-promotion.
You can never have too much of that.
No. Aided by an engaging on-screen presence, she could publicly address without offending listeners what were then borderline taboo subjects such as fulfillment and infidelity. It was a jarring, significant achievement in the 50s and 60s when television's fictional couples were still portrayed as sleeping in separate beds. You know, because Mike and, or not the Bradys, but I'm thinking like the Beaver family.
I'm thinking Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah, they had twin beds. And Dr. Joyce Brothers, she became a TV psychologist. So I guess you could make the argument that maybe we shouldn't take as much, you have to take it for what it is. She was a fixture on TV, did a lot of guest spots. I was looking up some video today, and Happy Days and Conan O'Brien and Married to the Children. Nothing really appropriate for radio that I could find for our segment here. Because she might have talked about some topics which were a little bit uncomfortable for those.
Risque.
And I think she had kind of that, toward the latter part of her life, she would say some wacky things for a woman of her age and her stature. But I found this commercial, which I think is her last TV appearance in the last few years, and I want to play this. And not to make fun of the product she's selling, but just maybe you come from the 50s, you're a doctor, you've done all these great things on TV, and this is kind of what you've been doing.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joyce Brothers. Those of us who are independent and live alone shouldn't do so without having emergency protection. And for reliability and peace of mind, I recommend the Alert USA Emergency Response System, designed to protect you and your home.
With Alert USA, simply wear our pendant in and around your...
It's good to see she was working till the end.
Yeah, I think this video is from 2010.
2010, that's right. While earning her bachelor's degree in home economics from Cornell University, Brothers developed an interest in psychology, so she was a home economics expert. At Columbia, she studied psychology, earning a master's degree in 1950 and a doctorate 3 years later. She wrote her dissertation on anxiety avoidance and escape behavior. Well, TV is a great place for anxiety avoidance and escape behavior.
Yeah, that's exactly where you go.
Check out the IMDb. She has a long library of TV shows and game shows. Match Game. I was trying to find some Match Game audio.
Oh, that would have been great.
Well, again, there's some topics on there that we're just going to try to avoid here in Flashback Twin Cities.
Sure.
And remember, our number here is 651-275-1220. You can follow us on Twitter, TC Media Now. And some of the video and audio we'll be talking about today can be found on tcmedianow.com. So we have a good guest today. Good friend of mine, Johnny Canton. You might remember his voice from WDGY, WCCO-FM, WLTE, Bowling for Dollars, Bolorama. many other titles.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. Thank you for inviting me and being your guest.
Well, I'm looking at your lovely partner, girlfriend Janie, brought this book in. I'm just looking at your resume here and all the stations you were at before Minneapolis. We assume we've adopted you into Minneapolis. Now, you're not going to leave us now for a different city, right?
No. I've been here a long time, since 66, November of 66, as a matter of fact. And many of the stations you're looking at, several were owned by one company. So
sure.
It was a matter of not moving around so much, but transferring among the properties owned by either one man or a company.
Similar to today. Similar to four stations being owned in the conglomerate world we are today.
Yes, indeed.
Let's talk a little bit about the early days. What you grew up in Missouri, correct?
Missouri.
Mm-hmm. And you decided you wanted to get into radio, or how did this whole career start?
Well, it goes back a ways. I was born in Kansas City, and then we lived in the suburbs of Kansas City. And I was about 13 years old. And I, up until that point, I wanted to be a teacher, school teacher. And then one very warm Missouri night in July, my parents and I would drive around because we didn't have air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And it really would get hot down there in that time of the year. So one evening I said, why don't we stop by this little radio station down there, which I used to listen to, KOKO. And so we stopped in, and it was so warm, the announcer could not maintain his window air conditioner.
Wow.
Because it would make too much noise. So he had all the doors open, so you could literally walk into this small little radio station. And we stood in the newsroom area, and I was looking into the window, and watching this announcer, and this something happened, an epiphany. You know, it's like, that's what I want to do.
This is my calling.
And yeah, and we walked out, and I told my dad, I said, this is it. I'm gonna become on the air.
And did your dad say, what are you thinking? What are you talking
about?
Well,
I'm sure, in his mind, he probably thought, yeah, sure, and you know, and I'm going to become president of the United States. but I did. I pursued it, and I used to go out to that little radio station because we lived in Warrensburg, Missouri, is the town I'm talking about. And I collected all the old commercials that they threw away, the written commercials, and all the news copy I could take away. That was when news came over a news wire.
I can appreciate that.
Ripped and took it home and read it and had my own little radio station at home. So that's where it started.
And where are those early tapes? Now, we got to find those and put those on.
I could not afford a tape recorder, so it was all in the air.
Okay. So you actually ended up working at KOKO.
I did later, yeah. I was going to high school, and right after my junior year in high school, I was 16, and I was pounding on the door of this other little radio station in a town called Lexington, Missouri, which isn't that far from where we lived and Warrensburg. And I couldn't really get the ear, pardon the expression, of the general manager, because he thought I was way too young to work at the station. But as it would happen, in April, mid-April of 1958, they had a problem with their part-time weekend man, a problem that resulted in his being fired, and they had no one in the wings. And the program director of this radio station was my friend. I mean, he was really my mentor and friend, and he was pushing the general manager, Ralph Metter, to hire me. But Ralph consistently said no until this one weekend when they were shorthanded. So Ralph called, Kermit is the program director's name. He says, well, let's give John a chance. So Kermit got a hold of me, and I went on the air May 8th, which is not that far back, you know.
Celebration.
1958.
I wasn't going to get the years, but since we've entered that, we can kind of go through the years here.
Yeah, I'm not shy.
Okay, I appreciate that. So you were not trained by a broadcasting school. You were
not
trained
at that time. I trained myself. Like I said, it was like almost at least 2.5 years of rehearsing in my room, in my parents' house, where I would have a daily show after school. And go through disc jockey work and read news and commercials and ultimately, I got a tape recorder, a great big old thing that, you know.
Reel to reel.
Yeah, reel to reel. So I did capture some things, but they've since been gone.
That's what Tom studied. When Tom is a recent Brown graduate. I think that's how he was doing studying here the last few months.
Studying that. I wasn't doing it as much as you, which is probably why you're much better than I am. But, I had a question for you, and now I can't remember it. Oh.
You'll think of it.
When you started recording yourself for the first time, were you really shocked
at
how
shocked.
You sound?
I was shocked, to be honest. I remember the day and time. I had no money. We had no money. And the only money I was earning was as a stock boy in an old dime store. Remember dime stores? Like Woolworths
Ben
and
Franklin.
Mattingly.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
Ben Franklin. Right. You got it. Mm-hmm. And so I saved up a little bit of money, and I found out that this gentleman wanted to sell this reel-to-reel tape recorder. And he had it at an electronic shop, and I went in, and I wanted to, I'd never heard myself at that point in time. And so I went in test drove it, and then I played it back, and I was shocked. I didn't realize that I sounded like that.
You know, a lot of people who hear themselves for the first time, that's the only time they'll ever record themselves. They say, "I'm done.
Yeah,
that's it. I do not sound good."
it's a skill to be able to actually listen to yourself after recording and be able to be comfortable listening to yourself. It's a very uncomforting thing at first to hear yourself and think this is what people think I sound like.
I think it must take years to get used to it.
Well, yeah, I don't think you ever really get used to it. You know, it's just like people who are on television. You know, I don't think they're or in movies or they're not. Some people I've read, and you have too, I'm sure.
We'll never see their own work.
No. They make a movie, and that's it.
That,
they don't even want to see it. You know, that's amazing to me.
As long as they keep on getting paychecks.
That's
right. Jobs.
So you moved from, our guest today, Johnny Canton on Flashback Twin Cities, you moved from Missouri to Fort Collins, Colorado. Now, that's a little bit of a culture shock.
Yeah.
Going from.
Well, let's go back to when I got the job in Lexington.
Oh, sure.
And then I was between junior and senior year in high school.
And how much were they paying you, just if you don't mind me asking?
$1 an hour.
I like it. Okay.
That was the minimum wage at
I
that
like
time.
Okay.
And they had to pay you minimum because of the Federal Communications Commission. So anyway, I went on the air in May of 58, and then the following year was my senior year in high school. Well, you can imagine the status I had at this little Higginsville high school, and I'm on the air at a station that most people listened to because it had all the local news and the farm stuff. And so it was a breezy senior. I enjoyed it.
That was a fantastic senior year.
Yeah. And then when I graduated in May of 59, then I immediately wanted to go to college. I wanted to get some college. And I didn't want to wait until the fall.
Right.
So I went over and enrolled at that time it was Central Missouri State College in Warrensburg, Missouri. And I enrolled. And then I walked right from there to the KOKO radio station. And I sat down with the general manager, and I had an audition tape. And I said, I'd like to work here if I could. And so I played to the tape. He listened to it, and he said, when can you start? So I was on the air there. And now listen to this schedule in Warrensburg. I went on the air at 7:30 in the morning to 12:30, 5 hours, morning drive and all that other stuff. Drove over to the college. And I had my classes stacked to where I'd get enough credits, and I went to school from 1 to 4.
Right.
Then I came back to the radio station, did 4:30 to 6. So I did morning and afternoon drive, and then Saturdays from 6 until 10 in the p.m., you know.
So that must have been a out-of-body experience that year.
I would have paid them, to be honest.
Did you actually manage the 4 to 6? I mean, you have to do preparation time and everything in order to do
that show. It was tough. By the seat of your pants, actually, you know, while I'm sitting there. Actually, 4:30 to 6. But while I'm sitting there, I'm writing things down. I'm running to the news wire.
Well, I think this is an era of radio where it's not – I mean, I'm popping up the weather here and the computer here. You had to go physically walk it off the prompter machine.
Walk right out of a studio like this one into another room, which was closed door because the Associated Press machine or UPI, whichever one we had, was clicking and clacking. So you couldn't you know, you had to make some moves.
And you and I were talking a little bit before the show, and I'm looking at these photos from the early days in Missouri. You're dressed like you're going to prom every night.
Yeah, that's right.
You weren't able to go to work in shorts and a t-shirt. You had to wear your.
I worked the weekends initially, so I could dress pretty.
Okay.
That was the one you're looking at is a studio shot, you know.
But DGY didn't let you dress casual, did they?
No. When I first got there in November of '66, they had a pretty not self-imposed, but it was kind of a nice dress code. And in fact, we were all trying to outdo each other. It got to be that, you know, the program director, Scott Burton, and you probably remember that name. And he and I were good friends, and I was the music director. And he would come in well-dressed, and then I felt, well, I better try to outdo him. And then you had, trying to think of some of the names that were there. Well, George Young and Donald K. Martin was there a little bit later, but everybody dressed and we all looked pretty good.
Well, let's talk a little about that trip to Minnesota. We're going to take a break right now. We'll come back with Johnny Cadden on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220.
Yeah, get down. It's Gilbert O'Sullivan at 947 at WDGY. You know, most kids today are good kids. We want them to stay that way. After all, they're the only generation we've got. We just suggest you support the Boys Clubs of America. Help them help you. I remember to this land. You the dark and blue. Yeah. Got no money and don't want any. Just traveling around. Speaking of having money, there was a conversation between a wealthy man and a newspaper reporter. Now that you're a wealthy man, are you ever bothered by the friends you had when you were poor? Asked the reporter. And came the wealthy man's answer, I never had any friends when I was poor.
What a great voice that is.
Wow, that brings back a few memories.
WDGY 1968.
Yeah.
Hey, just have a caller, actually, would like to talk to you.
Oh, really?
We have Scott here.
Scott, welcome to Flashback Twin Cities.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. 20 years ago, after you did what you did and peeked in other people's studios and took the news copy and stuff, I did the same thing with you guys at WCCO-FM. There was a time you were on with Tim Russell and Carl John Lensgraf.
Oh, yeah.
And Linda Painovich, the great late Linda Painovich, did the news.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me a news copy one time that I took over to KBEM at Vocational because I was learning how to do radio. And then I went to KFAI. And one of the stories, I'll never forget it, it was about the Jim Jones tragedy.
Mm.
That was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still fun to watch you guys work.
Well, thank you very
much.
And
that little white shack in downtown Minneapolis.
Yes. Oh, boy.
Thank you for calling.
215 South 11th Street, I think it was. Yeah,
that's right.
Right across from the old Lumington Hotel.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you for the call. That audio from WDGY, that is great because I love the what's it called when you do the voiceover of the record when you first play the first few seconds?
Oh, you're talking up the ramp.
That's it, exactly, the ramp.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And now, did you rehearse those, or were those just kind of come wing it and come naturally?
Yeah. I think you acquire an ear for that. And of course, you played the song so many times, you know that intro pretty good. So you kind of time what you're going to say to the length of time you have, and if there's some little beats in the, you know, midpoint, you can bring them right in, and you get used to it. It's kind of fun.
I think I've heard at broadcasting conventions they actually have competitions to try and get it as close to when the song starts up the ramp.
That's great. Let's talk a little bit about coming to Minneapolis, and I want to, you know, we can come back a couple of other stations, but you've been in Minneapolis for almost 47 years now?
Yeah, 47 years this coming November, I guess it
will be. And when you came here to work at WDGY, did you think this was going to be another two-year job and you were going to work somewhere different after a while?
Well, I really didn't know. I always wanted to work for Storrs Broadcasting. Mm-hmm. At that time, they were a very, very large broadcasting company. They had six of the biggest top 40 radio stations in America. And one of the stations, literally, I grew up under the antenna, was WHB down in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were really the company I wanted to work for. So when I left Cleveland, I had an opportunity to come up up here to WDGY, and I thought, well, gee, that's on my bucket list,
mm-hmm.
even though we didn't have bucket lists then.
Sure,
but
sure.
I thought, I can't turn this one down. So I took the job, and I didn't know how long I was going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
When I arrived here, I was married and had a six-month-old daughter, and it was cold. This was November, and I had no idea what kind of cold I was in for, or winter I was in for.
You get your job in broadcasting by being inspired by a hot summer night, and then
yeah.
you come to Minneapolis and you can't leave the house for 6 months. But that, in November 66, you come to WDGY, and WDGY was a rock station. It was.
Oh, yeah.
It's had a few different formats since then,
mm-hmm.
and the call letters and the numbers have changed, but it was a rock station for the first 11 years you were there.
Yeah, and a very big one. You know,
tell me a little bit about the WDGY days. I mean, tell me a little bit about when you first got there. What was the rock era at that point?
Well, we tried to imitate a very popular top 40 radio station at the time, KHJ out in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
It was programmed by Bill Drake, who really set the broadcasting on its ear back in the mid 60s. And that's what we were trying to emulate, really, in it was a very exciting radio station. We had a lot of promotions on the air, contests. Outside of the radio station, all of us on the air would play basketball against different faculties,
mm-hmm.
different high schools in and around the area. So we were a very, very visible radio station public-wise.
And your main local rival, of course, was KDWB.
Yes. Yeah, very.
And what was the difference between DGY and KDWB, in your opinion, at that point?
Not that much. I never thought we both were playing basically the same songs. We had a little bit better coverage because WDGY was a 50,000-watt radio station,
mm-hmm.
even though it was pretty structured where they broadcast that signal, but it was still covering this area very, very well. And KDWB had 5,000 watts.
I'm looking at a picture here, and I think that I need to point it out. I wish I could show this or the radio, mm-hmm. but I can't. It's Johnny Canton with the Beatles.
That was when I was in Cleveland. I was program director at that time, and we brought the Beatles in as a promotion for the radio station.
You brought the Beatles. I love that. We just gave the Beatles a call, and they came in.
and that was and actually we shouldn't have had the Beatles, but I think Louisville had a contract with them for this date. It was
mm-hmm.
in August, and but Louisville canceled for one reason or another, probably money, and so our management owners jumped on it and grabbed them up. But I remember one of our owners, Norman Wayne, was just nervous, because he had to come up with $75,000.
Oh, my
And
goodness.
That was the front money. I mean, that was, mm-hmm. well, that was the only money. But they wanted it up front. Brian Epstein used to manage the Beatles. And
a pretty good manager.
Yeah. And he grabbed it, and we didn't know. We didn't know how well they're going to go. And we rented the municipal stadium downtown Cleveland, which was the home of the baseball team,
mm-hmm.
which is no longer. But that was quite a promotional trip. That was.
Did you get a chance to actually talk to them?
Oh, like, yeah, sure.
Are they incredibly friendly?
There was a gentleman that called me, owned a mobile home dealership.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, Johnny, he said, you got the Beatles coming in. Is there anything I can do? Maybe set up a trailer out on the, the field? And I said, well, yeah, that sounds good to me. So
yeah.
That's what he did. He configured a mobile home and delivered it, placed it at the second base area between actually a pitching mound and second base. That was going to be their green room. And so that worked out real well. And that's where those pictures were taken, and that's where we got together with them.
Other big pictures.
We had other acts, too, by the way. The Ronettes were front acts. Bobby Hebb had a hit record at the time called Sunny. The Circle, Turn Down Day, and Red Rubber Ball, they were on the bill.
Oh, yeah,
and then, of course, we had a band for them, and the Beatles did their own music.
So was this work or was this just a fun? This is going to work and having a ball every day. This is,
yeah, that was fun.
Life could be.
That was a fun radio station. Blixie.
Life could be worse. I'm looking at your DGY photos here, and I'm looking at a picture with you and the Hubert Humphrey, Muriel Humphrey, George Seaton, the director of the movie
Airport.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about the movie Airport. I think people recall that it was filmed here in Minneapolis, and you played a gate agent, right?
Yes, a great big one-liner, but I didn't wind up on the cutting room floor, as they say. And you know what? I still get paid for that.
That's
because
fair.
It's still being aired, and because I was a member of AFTRA, and they had a reciprocal deal with SAG.
So every time that show's on TV.
Well, yeah. Well, not every time, but over the course of the year, it'll do it. And I got to tell you something. I just got a check from them, and I don't know why, but it's the union SAG got a check from NBC Universal for $60.
Hey.
And the reason was it lists Murder, She Wrote / something else, the title of the segment. So the only reason I can believe I got it is because they use possibly a segment of that film within their show, one of their shows. But I didn't know about that because I was never on
Murder, She Wrote. You weren't suspect number one in a Jessica Fletcher murder? That's unfortunate.
Of course, it could have been a mistake, too, but that's okay. Keep it coming.
I'm looking at the scene here, and this is great because we had Johnny at the gate, and then all of a sudden a frantic Johnny pointing, and it's a great movie if you haven't seen it yet. Again, our guest is Johnny.
Well, think about that. We filmed that in 1969, and it was released in 70 and became a... Oof, big movie.
Big hit. And I'm guessing for a couple of years, you might have said, hey, I was in Airport.
Yeah, yeah.